Thank you so much for joining us today on Money Radio. It is a pleasure now to welcome Kevin Kelly. He is a founding executive editor of Wired Magazine, a former editor-publisher of the Whole Earth Review. He has written several books, including Cool Tools, What Technology Wants, New Rules for the New Economy, Out of Control, The Silver Cord. He has appeared on basically every place you can think of to appear, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and much more. He has a new book, and this one is especially cool. It is entitled The Inevitable: Understanding the 12 Technological Forces That Will Shape Our Future by Kevin Kelly. The Inevitable. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's a real pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
When we think of the inevitable, there's that old quote, I think it's from Benjamin Franklin, the only things in life that are inevitable are death and taxes. But of course, change is also a constant. And that's what this book really looks at, is change. Not so much trying to claim that X or Y is inevitable, but that the change that will result in X or Y is inevitable. Is that about right?
That's the central part. The beginning of the book, I make out the case that there is a we're in this future in which flux, change, upgrading is constant, and that we need to actually accept that and get good at it, so that we're going to be in this sort of perpetual newbie state where we're always having to learn something new, even though we thought we mastered the last set. There's now a whole new bunch of commands or gestures or knowledge that we need to master, and it seems relentless, but that's sort of where we are, that this is inevitable.
It does seem relentless, and many people fear change. What do you say to those who are fearful of this new future?
Yes, and there are some things that are kind of scary. It's not just the change, it's the things that are coming, ubiquitous artificial intelligence, constant virtual worlds that we can enter into that will be very different. We're headed to a world where more and more of our lives, if not all of our lives, are tracked in some capacity. And so there's a long list of things that could be very scary about them. Well, so part of what I'm saying is that I'm trying to give a view that a lot of this will bring tremendous benefits, though they may be hard to see. And that if we embrace this technology, that we're actually more likely to derive more of the benefits than if we try to prohibit them. Because when we try to stop this, we don't get to steer. When we engage these inevitable things, we actually get to steer them in the directions that we find most beneficial. So it's by using, engaging them that we actually are able to derive more benefits from.
The book, The Inevitable: Understanding the 12 Technological Forces That Will Shape Our Future, and the book is divided into 12 chapters, taking a look at those 12 technological forces, but they're not identified as a technological force, rather as a verb, really. So this is an action taking place.
Yes. So one of the shifts that we've seen and for the past 30 years and we will continue to head into is this shift from things that are nouns or solid products, and they're becoming much more soft processes and services. So what used to be a product is now a service, like, say, a car. So instead of buying a car, you get a ride service, and it's a soft thing. It can be upgraded fast. It can change fast. Instead of having a noun, things are much more fluid. And like your phone is constantly upgrading itself, for that matter, over time. It's something that's changing even as you use it. So this idea of flows and things that were once hard have less and less material in them, and they behave more and more like software. And I think the idea that things are less nouns and more as verbs. And so I outline all the trends as processes that are ongoing that are moving and in constant motion. They're not done. And so the what's inevitable is the large forms. It's not the products or the particular services. These are unpredictable. You can say that the telephone was inevitable on once you had electricity, but the iPhone, the specific product, is not. The internet was inevitable once you had telephones, but my Twitter was not. And so what I'm trying to show is that there's a direction, a movement. That's what's inevitable, and that's where we're going.
And if we take the concept of the internet, where is it moving to? What is it becoming?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I think in the kind of the highest level, the most general terms, what I would say is if you want to imagine where the kind of internet would be in 25 years from now, think of it as more of, instead of a place that we go to, like we say we're logging on to it, it's cyberspace, you know, it's this kind of a spatial thing. Think of it more as if it was a conversation with a presence that we are conversing with, that we have an experience in. So we'll be more about, the internet will be less about an internet of knowledge and more a kind of internet of experiences, that you have like a virtual reality experience or experience that you have with a social entity or an experience you have with an AI that you're conversing with. So the artificial intelligence that we will see, most of it will be behind the scenes. We'll be invisible. It'll be boring. It'll be like electricity, you know, doing good work that we're not aware of. But the artificial intelligence that we have some contact with, we will converse with. That will be the interface. It won't really be typing. It'll be like you talk to it, and you'll converse with it, and it'll be kind of always there, and it'll be a presence. And so we'll think of being online as being, you know, near and conversing with a presence rather than being somewhere.
So it will be ubiquitous. It will have intelligence. It will be able to learn. How is that going to affect us as we have, and another one of the technological forces that you talk about is cognifying, as we have this intelligence in the background around us everywhere? What does that mean for things like music, for business, for doing our laundry?
Yeah, so I think this is pretty major. You know, we invented something I would call, in retrospect, artificial power, artificial energy. So during the agricultural era, the only way you could make anything was with your own muscle or the muscle of your animals. And you could make some cool stuff, but it was still pretty tough. But we invented artificial energy, not our natural energy, and that artificial energy came in steam power and electricity, and we made a grid of electricity and sent it all over the country or the world, and anybody, even a farmer, could purchase electricity, and they could use that to motorize something that had not been motorized before, automate it. So they could take a manual water pump, and they could make an electric pump out of it, and you multiplied that electrification, that motorization, by a million times as you take something, some X, and you add the artificial power to it. And that was the Industrial Revolution. So everything we see in our cities and in our suburbs are all generated by this immense artificial power. And that was the Industrial Revolution, which transformed all aspects of our lives. And now we're going to do the same thing at even a bigger scale with artificial intelligence. So anything that we had electrified before, like the electric pump, now we're going to cognify. We're going to add smartness to it, and they'll have a smart pump that will do things. And so the recipe is sort of take something and add AI. And the more obscure the thing, probably the more powerful the transformation by adding AI. So you could take like something like a taxi, and you add AI. What do you have? You have Uber. Take laundry, and you can add AI. What could you do with AI? Well, you could have it could sort through your clothes. It could wash each shirt or pants differently, maybe because the shirts themselves have chips in it that are telling you how dirty they are or how they were last washed. And then you could actually have a laundry that was using AI in a way that you would be wasteful to have humans do, but it would be incredibly powerful to have 1,000 artificial minds working on this problem.
And of course, this is going to have huge implications for the way we conduct business when we're operating essentially real time for everything, and everything is available and ubiquitous. Do we really need to own anything anymore, or is it just all shared and all a matter of access?
Yeah, that's another, besides the fact that we're cognifying things, the other large-scale trend that is pertinent to businesses is that everything is becoming, as I said, more and more soft, more and more away from a product and towards a service. And the thing about services is that there's hundreds of more ways to make something into a service than a product. Products are limited in because they're fixed and hard and complete. Our service is constantly in motion. It's undone. It's unfinished. It's always flowing. And so there are more varieties to make services. So like if you're going to take a car into a ride service, there are so many other ways to make rides than there is to make cars. And so there's a huge opportunity in this. And one of the consequences of this flowing and distribution of services is that if you can provide a service instantly to people anywhere they are, anytime, that acts almost like better than owning the product. So if I can give you a piece of music anywhere you are, anytime, if you can reach and get any music anywhere, that's in many ways better than owning that music, because you don't have to upgrade it, you don't have to store it, you don't have to secure it. If it's a physical thing, you don't have to clean it and maintain it. So this idea of like being able to reach for things or summon things and having them there instantly is many ways superior than owning it, because owning has lots of responsibilities and duties. And so there's this shift away from ownership towards access, towards accessing things. And again, beginning, it's just kind of digital stuff. Like, I don't want to have to own movies. I'll just access a stream of movies that I can summon on demand. I don't need to actually own the music. I can just have access to the music. And then we can move it into the physical realm. As the physical things become more soft and like services, they also can be accessed. And so instead of buying a car, you have access to auto, robo-driven cars that summon and appear wherever you want them, and then they disappear after you're done. And so the question is, what other kinds of things can we see that way? And Uber and Airbnb are kind of just the beginnings of that idea that you can access stuff rather than owning them. And the great frontier and opportunity for the businesses ahead is there are so many things that we now think of as physical products that will become services that can be accessed.
That would seem to have some very broad implications for our economic systems. If we don't have ownership, do we still have capitalism?
Right. And not only that, but there's a lot of sense in which our own sense of status and wealth is tied up in things that you own. And if ownership, even in that sense, was not as desirable, then that would even change how people thought of themselves and their own wealth. Maybe the wealth is something that you have an increasing degree of access to rather than a degree of ownership. So yes, I think this is the core of capitalism is built around ownership. If ownership is not as important, then that will change. But however, I just to kind of show the other side, these auto-driven cars that people have access to, somebody ultimately has to own them and take care of them and stuff. And so there's a business there. What we're talking about is that you won't own everything, but you own some things, and so more of your life. There's too many things that we've made to be able to own everything. And so as we increase the number of opportunities and choices and products in the world, we triple them, we 100 times them. We just simply don't have room for that. But somebody will own it. Somebody will own it, and then we'll have access.
And there's an interesting point, and we'll follow up on that, the idea of this limitless realm of possibilities that are opening up before us in the not-so-distant future. We're talking with Kevin Kelly, and this is an intriguing topic. The inevitable, understanding the 12 technological forces that will shape our future. The inevitable, by Kevin Kelly. More in just a moment. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're talking with Kevin Kelly. He is the author of a new book, The Inevitable, Understanding the 12 Technological Forces That Will Shape Our Future, The Inevitable. He's also a founding executive editor of Wired magazine, so he really is wired in when it comes to technology. And as we think about this idea that technology becomes ubiquitous, that it becomes more intelligent and actually is able to learn, we really have to look at the idea of what the world looks like. And our view of the world has been changing because of technology. We can now look at a world of superlatives, extraordinaries, limitless possibilities. We have an explosion of knowledge. And one of the things that you bring out is that's going to bring about an explosion of questions as well.
Yeah, there's Google answers about 1 billion questions a day, and most of those answers are pretty good. And if we, again, look into the future in another 30 years and just imagine the power of those answers and the machines that can answer that, they'll become very smart. So where we're headed to is basically, if you want an answer to something, you ask a machine. And what becomes valuable in that context where answers are cheap, accurate, ubiquitous, is asking a good question. Questions become ever more valuable. It's sort of like the old Peter Drucker distinction that I always liked, which was, you're saying in the old days, the assignment was to do the job right. Okay, that was, and to do it better, to do it right, to perfect it in some ways. But where we're going, the more valuable thing is to do the right job. That executive function, he called it, of actually deciding what it is that you want to do. And so that second thing is a question. It's not like doing the job well. It's what job should we be doing? And that becomes more valuable. The machines will do the jobs well, but our role is actually to deciding what it is that we want to do, what's the best thing to do. So it moves from the efficiency of getting the right answer, of doing the right thing, things that can be done and defined in terms of efficiency and productivity, to the things that are not very efficient, which is to ask a question, which is to explore. Basically, when you do innovation, you're saying a what if. You're asking, what about this? Or can I go in that direction? That's what science is. It's fundamentally inefficient because it's based on failures one after another and questioning, where you're saying, well,
but isn't
how about
technology
this?
Going to start asking, aren't the machines going to start asking those questions as well?
I think we will use them to help us to make a question, but I think asking a question is, for now, something that by definition is ill-defined. And so far, our understanding of machines is that they work best when they're defined. And I think it'll be a long time before a machine can ask a question as good as humans. However, there will certainly be machine-aided questions. They can randomly generate combinations of things that will help us ask questions. But there are questions and then there's good questions. And a good question is one that liberates other new questions beyond it. And I think that's where we're headed to, is not just asking questions, but asking good questions, questions that are productive. It's like, can you explore? And exploration is not just going anywhere. It's actually going down the path that will then lead to other new paths. There's an art to it.
It's an explosion of things that are about to happen, and they're about to happen in the very near future. And this is one of the most intriguing books when it comes to the forces that will shape our future. The Inevitable, Understanding the 12 Technological Forces That Will Shape Our Future, by Kevin Kelly. This is a really good one, a very thought-provoking book, well written. The Inevitable by Kevin Kelly, our guest today. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
It has really been great, and you've asked some fantastic questions. Thank you.